It's the BN Blitz Podcast. Vic Carucci and Jay Skirsky in week two of the NFL season. The Buffalo Bills getting ready to go to Carolina to take on the Panthers. Jay, let's start with it. It's the homecoming. It's the one date that was really circled, I would say, in the darkest ink for this football team before the season or when the schedule came out, because Sean McDermott gets to go back to the place where he was defensive coordinator the past 6 years, and Brandon Bean basically spent his football life preparing for what he's doing now as GM of the Bills in the front office of the Panthers. His most recent role with them as an assistant GM. A lot of focus on that, and of course there's some Bills players who were former Panthers. What do we make of that? I mean, how big of a backdrop is the homecoming for all these former Panthers?
Well, I think Sean McDermott has done his best to make it not that big of a backdrop and to try to treat it as much as possible like any other game. And, you know, he said the right things about that, treating it like it's, you know, just week two on the NFL schedule and they're a good opponent and yada, yada, yada. A lot of coach speak, which you would expect, which we've kind of become accustomed to with Sean McDermott.
He's
learned the coach speak lessons. But I mean, let's be honest. I mean, this has got to be a special week for these guys. And, you know, certainly Mike Tolbert, the running back, has kind of talked about that. And I was chatting with Brandon Bean, the general manager, just at practice, nothing official, not in an interview setting or anything like that, and asking him what he had going on this weekend. And he said he's having dinner with his parents, and he's going to meet up with some friends. So, of course, this is going to be a really special trip for these guys. I mean, they, you know, in a lot of ways, sort of maybe less so McDermott, certainly Bean came of age in the NFL, and McDermott, largely because of what he did in Carolina, has this opportunity with the Bills. So when they walk into that stadium on Sunday morning, they can say all the things that they want right now about how it's another trip, but there's no question in my mind that this is going to be pretty special for them. And, you know, for the Bills in particular, and in general, and for the guys that, you know, don't have the homecoming storyline, this is a big game for this team. You know, they are 1-0, and we'll laugh about it, and I know people will get a kick out of it, but they are in first place in the AFC East. They're coming off a win. 16 of these games, I've said it a million times before, they're all big, but given all of those storylines with these guys that are heading back to Carolina, I think this is really an intriguing matchup for week two of the NFL season.
I think so, and I'm focused as much as anything on the student versus teacher angle, because Ron Rivera, you know, gets cited quite a bit by Sean McDermott as far as how he goes about what he does, or to use his favorite word, process. He is a disciple of Andy Reid, first and foremost, together in Philadelphia. Ron Rivera, of course, influenced by that same type of thinking. But when you really look at it as far as the most recent time that and the place where, let's face it, Sean McDermott made enough of his bones to become a head coach, it's those 6 years in Carolina. It really wasn't the, 13 seasons in Philly, even though that prepped him. But he had an unsuccessful, to say the least, run at defensive coordinator. History will show that he was put in an impossible position, replacing the late, great Jim Johnson there as coordinator. And Andy Reid recognized that, but Andy was the one who had to let him go. And then he immediately gets this opportunity with the Panthers and capitalizes on it, helping build a great defense down there at least a couple of years ago, and now he's getting his shot as a head coach. So Carolina, I think in so many ways is, and he'll never maybe admit this now, maybe later when he does his memoirs or whatever, or reflects on it in retirement, this defines him, this team, what the Carolina team, what he did there, what he did with Rivera. So in this, again, student versus teacher matchup, I got to believe that there are a lot of thoughts running through his mind, as much as he maintains that it's about focusing on the game and getting better and all the coach speak things that Sean McDermott is good at saying. You know that behind the scenes, behind closed doors, in those offices at One Bills Drive. The preparation is all about, okay, what would Ron do here? What would Ron do there? Because you're preparing for situations and circumstances. And then on top of that, it's the weaknesses that he knows, that Brandon Bean knows, of those Panther players, or at least a large portion of that roster.
Yeah, and we have to remember here, too, that that's happening down in Carolina, too. You know, Ron Rivera is saying those exact things about Sean McDermott, saying, I know he likes to dial this up in this situation, and I know, you know, these are the types of plays that he likes to run. Now, obviously, he doesn't have the familiarity with the Bills personnel that Sean McDermott does with the Panthers personnel. And I do think that there is, it would only be logical that there is some sort of an advantage for the Bills. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to mean that they're going to go down there and win, because as Sean McDermott is fond of saying, you know, the players are on the field making the plays. You know, the coaches can only do so much. And I do think that Carolina has a more talented roster, particularly when you start at quarterback. You know, I think Cam Newton, despite maybe you know what was an uneven year for him last year, and maybe an uneven start to the season last week, and he's coming back from the injuries and all of that. But let's face it, this guy was the MVP not all that long ago. So I wonder how much of an advantage there is on either side, given that familiarity. I do think that it can't help but help the Bills in some way. And as you mentioned, it's not just Sean McDermott. It's those players in the room, and there's several of them. Kalen Clay, a wide receiver who, you know, hasn't done anything for the Bills, has got that Carolina playbook still right. Fresh in his mind. You know what I mean? And Brandon Bean knows the weaknesses and the strengths of some of those players. So I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they're all long weeks in the NFL, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they've been particularly long for the Bills this week and also for the Panthers, because, you know, there is a lot that goes into preparing for this game because of the knowledge base on both sides regarding the opposition.
Yeah, and I think there could be even a tendency, maybe on both sides, but the first-year head coach is with the Buffalo Bills, as is the first-year GM. There could be danger of over-preparation. I've seen that happen before, you know, where you're the nerves, whatever you want to call it, get the better of you, and you are so anxious to try to, of course, make this thing work and take advantage of what you know. Maybe you overload not just your own brain, but those of the players who have to do the playing, have to do the executing. All right, you brought up Cam Newton and the challenge there. And right off the bat, Jay, this team, well, I say right off the bat, it's week two, and this team finds itself facing one of the best in the game at quarterback after a round with Josh McCown, who on their schedule might represent, or pretty well could represent, the worst of the quarterbacks they're going to face. A journeyman, and the Jets didn't have much in the way of options, so they put him out there, and you saw a guy who couldn't even average, 5 yards per pass. It was under that for something as far as yards per pass that he had against the Bills defense, and give the Bills defense some credit for that. But Cam Newton, I mean, big, strong, heck of an arm, tremendous arm, powerful, can make every throw from pretty much anywhere behind the line of scrimmage. And that running dimension, which you didn't see much of in this game this past week against San Francisco, even though it was it looked like a pretty easy win for them. But, I mean, they put up 23 points against the 49ers. You would think they could have put up even more and should have put up even more for the dimensions they have with Kelvin Benjamin at wide receiver, Devin Funchess at that other receiver spot, Greg Olsen at tight end, and then what they have in their backfield. So Christian McCaffrey, we'll get into some of those elements, but the rookie who is the real new toy in the toy box as a receiver and a runner. I think for this defense, for this Buffalo defense, this is we're going to see now the legit test. I want to give them credit for a solid preseason and for a very solid opener. But, Jay, it's very different now against Cam Newton.
Yeah, it's a much different challenge, as you mentioned there, from week one. I mean, I think that the Jets' offense is probably going to be the worst that the Bills see this year. And I'm not saying that Carolina's is going to be the best, but as you laid out there, there are multiple weapons for Cam Newton. excuse me, start with the running backs. You know, you mentioned McCaffrey, and he is going to be a challenge coming out of the backfield, a guy that the Bills are going to have to account for. I think he's going to be, for the fantasy listeners out there, one of those PPR monsters, the guy that, you know, racks up, even when he doesn't have a huge game, he makes so many catches that he produces fantasy-wise. And then, you know, Greg Olsen is a tight end, unlike anything that the Jets had. He's going to be a different challenge for this team. But it starts with Newton. And obviously, as I said a few minutes ago, he was the MVP of this league for a reason not all that long ago, just 2 years ago. So, you know, he's going to be determined, I think, to show that he can get back to that level. And what better way of doing it than doing it against his former defensive coordinator, who a lot of people are going to think, well, hey, if anybody's got the book on Cam Newton, it should be Sean McDermott. So, you know, it's Carolina's home opener. That goes into it. It's going to be hot down there. That goes into it. I will say, though, Vic, that, you know, you mentioned it's a different type of challenge for this Bills defense, and I agree. But I also look at it a little bit as somewhat of an opportunity for this defense, particularly up front with the pass rush, because if there's one thing that Cam Newton has, you know, consistently done throughout his career, he holds on to the ball and he tries to make big plays that way. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. He puts himself in a position to take a lot of hits, and you know, the Panthers are trying to limit that this year. Mark Gaughan wrote a real good story for the BN Blitz website about that, how Carolina is better trying to make sure Newton doesn't subject himself to that type of punishment. But you know, when you've got the arm strength that he does, he always thinks that he can make something happen. The Jets went into last week's game saying, we're just going to throw the ball. We got to dink and dunk it down the field. You mentioned it, 4.4 yards a pass. That meant that Shaq Lawson, Jerry Hughes, even the interior pass rushers, Marcel Darius, Kyle Williams, were sort of rendered, I don't want to say ineffective, but their productivity in terms of sack numbers was down. I think they're going to have an opportunity this year. And let's face it, Carolina's offensive line has not been a strength for this team. They signed Matt Khalil, who was a real high draft pick in Minnesota, did not have the type of career there with the Vikings that many hoped that he would. Got a pretty big contract down in Carolina, but I think the offensive line is an area that this Bills defensive line needs to take advantage of. And if Cam Newton decides that he's going to hold the ball and try to make big plays, then Jerry Hughes and Shaq Lawson have to get home and have to, you know, put up some sack numbers.
Yeah, and in talking to the members of that defensive front, talking to Kyle Williams, Shaq Lawson, Jerry Hughes, the common theme, and you could tell this has been something that's been drilled into their heads, Jay, all week long from Sean McDermott, certainly from Leslie Frazier, I'm sure Mike Waffle, the defensive line coach, have been preaching gang tackling, helmets, hats on the ball, and, you know, surround Newton in every way possible, and if one guy misses, make sure there are, you know, 10 other guys there. I mean, they were stressing this. It makes sense to stress that. I think, again, it's a different type of a challenge, because even when you have him wrapped up, even when you get your arms around his legs or his waist or wherever else you make contact, he still has that power, that sheer raw power to lift up his throwing arm and get the ball out and get it out to a receiver and make a play. But like you said, they've been careful, the Panthers, of limiting the number of contacts. He had that shoulder surgery in the offseason. They don't want to risk re-injury. And I think that's been more of what's been emphasized to him than what he probably would emphasize to himself. I think his default setting is make plays. And let's face it, he's a prideful, proud competitor. We saw how he handled or didn't handle the Super Bowl loss, how crushing that was to him. And a lot of people criticized how he was so terse after the game. But this was a guy who was bitterly disappointed and mad, angry at himself, especially. And I think his attitude after that loss to Denver, I think his attitude is, I'm not going to let a first-year head coach, even though he was here as the coordinator, come in here and skunk me with his scheme or with this defense that was 19th in the NFL last year.
Yeah, what's his nickname? You know, what's the touchdown celebration? The Superman. You know, yeah. He pulls the shirt open to show the S on the chest, and I think that his mentality, and not to say that he thinks he is Superman, but I think there's part of that, where, he doesn't like to think that there aren't things that he can do on the field. And that mentality, I think, both has gotten him to where it is, or where he is, I should say, in his career, that supreme confidence in his abilities. But it can also hurt him, too, when he tries to do too much. And I think for the Bills, that needs to be their focus, is trying to get him to maybe do a little bit too much. And if they can do that, maybe you can force some turnovers and take advantage of him that way.
And it isn't just the D-line, it is the secondary, and we saw how well this group played last week. So, I mean, nothing impressed me more, even though it was the Jets, and even though you walked in expecting them to do exactly what they did against that Jet team. How about it? Those four defensive backs who had never played together, come from all these different systems, learning a new system from new coaches, learning each other, trying to develop some level of chemistry, whatever you call it. It looked to me like Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer had played together for their entire careers. They were so natural, and you didn't see much in the way of false steps or movement when you go back and watch the tape of this game. And when they sent Poyer on that blitz, which was a tremendous call, because you had the way that their protection was set up and they didn't get out of it, he's coming with a clean ride. I mean, they were completely stacking to the other side. And so overall, I think this is and Leslie Frazier saw that and pounced on it. I say that this is a smart group. Tre'Davious White as a rookie seems pretty natural at cornerback. EJ Gaines, as a newcomer to this team, but a veteran, maybe not a tremendous player, but certainly good enough to complement what White and the other DBs do. And as a group, they were on. And so if the front does its part as far as pressuring Newton in ways that get him off balance, if not uncomfortable, I think this group is capable of making a play or two.
Yeah, I mean, really impressed with the secondary as a whole coming out of that Jets game. And, again, you can qualify it as it was against the Jets, and that's a point well taken. But, you just kind of ran through the guys there. I mean, White, as a rookie, looked like he was that he's been around and played in this league before. Right. And that was really impressive. I think a part of that is his LSU background, coming from the rich history of defensive backs that they have there.
Yeah, good one, yeah.
Yeah, and, Poyer, we'll talk about him a little bit more lately. I know we got a question from Twitter that we'll get to later that deals with Poyer in particular. I was impressed with him. And how about EJ Gaines? Thought to be sort of a throw-in to this Sammy Watkins trade. Yeah. Well, here he is. He's won a starting job and played pretty darn well in week one. I mean, I'm interested to see how he continues to develop in this defense. I mean, that is, if the Bills were able to get themselves a starting caliber cornerback, and Gaines certainly looked that in week one, and a second round pick for Watkins, not a bad deal. That's a pretty good feather under Brandon Bean's cap. It's got to obviously continue, but so far so good in that regard.
No question about it. All right, let's move to the offense, and we'll talk about LeSean McCoy, a very big start to his season, and a lot of, obviously, his total production from the line of scrimmage, 159 yards, 110 of that rushing, and starts out helping this team, this team that's led the NFL in rushing the last 2 years, start in that position for the 2017 season. And so that's the good news. The good news is LeSean McCoy looks like the guy we saw through training camp, the guy we thought was easily the team's best player from, what, the first second of practice, I believe, something like that, and who set himself apart from everyone else. Looks like he's in unbelievable shape, very motivated, you know, has come with the right attitude, is really, I think, loving the way this scheme is designed, this wide zone stretch that allows him to do some cutback things. I'd like him to carry the ball with a little more security, maybe a lot more security, but he was so confident running through that jet defense, like, no one's going to get this ball, so I'll hold it like a loaf of bread. And I'm not even sure if he was entirely following every play the way it was supposed to, as designed, as those runs, because, again, he felt like he had the joystick of a Madden game. He was you know, going in and out and zigzagging and doing his own thing. He won't have as much of that, I don't think, this week, because this is a better defense, especially when it comes to the stout people they have in the middle. So I think it'll be a different matchup from that standpoint for the Bills' offensive line. But before we break that part of it down, the carries, the workload. Sean McDermott wasn't kidding when he said we're going to get the ball in his hands as much as possible. And when you looked at that game plan, the receivers got what, seven touch? The first top two receivers get seven touches.
Four catches by wide receivers.
That's right. Four by receivers, seven targets. And then you get to, of course, the tight end, Charles Clay, and he was a focal point of the passing game. But the focal point was all the work that LeSean got as a runner, as a receiver. Is it too much? Is it going to be too much when you think about it? This was week one, and they used the guy to that extent.
Yeah, so what was it? It was 27 overall touches, 22 carries, 5 catches. You know, that puts him on pace for over 400 for the season. The number of running backs who have handled that type of workload is very small, and traditionally what happens is after a season in which they have that, there is a downhill sort of trend in their production. Now, the Bills may be looking at it as saying, well, we're not really worried about what LeSean McCoy is going to do in 2018 and 2019. He may not even be here. You know, let's face it, he's going to be 30 years old next year. However, he is really sort of defying what running backs do at 29 years old. I thought it was really interesting. Yesterday he was asked, you know, whether he sort of pays attention to what other guys around the league are doing. And he gave an interesting answer about how when he came into the league, it was Adrian Peterson and Arian Foster, Jamal Charles. Those were the types of guys that he was comparing himself to and sort of looking up to see, you know, what their stats were week to week. Well, now it's Ezekiel Elliott, who everybody knows down in Dallas in the second year. But then, you know, it's a group of rookies. And I wrote about it in today's Buffalo News. There were five 100-yard rushers in the NFL this past week, in week one. Three of those guys are rookies. One of them is Ezekiel Elliott in his second year, defending rushing champion. The other one is 29-year-old LeSean McCoy. So while the old guard of Peterson, of Charles, of Foster has sort of faded away, well, LeSean McCoy is as good as ever, and I talked with Mike Tolbert today for a column on Sunday inside the Bills, and we got to talking about LeSean McCoy, and I thought it was really interesting. One of the tidbits that he had to say was that the Bills don't send Mike Tolbert into the game. LeSean McCoy checks himself out of the game when he's ready for a break. So that tells you how much they're going to use this guy. If he's good to play, he's in. And if he's not, then, you know, then Tolbert will come in and spell him. But I thought that was pretty interesting. That's how they handle substitutions.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It speaks to, obviously, the talent level that LeSean has. It speaks to, and this can open up a whole nother, I don't want to get too diverted from the subject here, but it opens a new can of worms when you talk about salary structure and value. What he is being paid, nearly $9 million, what is additionally available to him, $2.5 million in bonus that he could acquire, I'm sure, for numbers of care, whatever the criteria is, but I'm sure it's related to the running back stats, right? Accumulating the right numbers of carries, yards, etc. So I'm sure that it's designed in a way that LeSean McCoy can't accuse any of the coaches, Rick Dennison or certainly Sean McDermott, of, hey, you're holding me off these bonuses, because that and the Pegulas, no one's worried about that. They'd want to pay. They'd want to pay that, for of course, because it means he's doing well. But it does make you pause on the whole Marcell Dareus issue, which we've covered, and I don't really want to pound on today, but it is the idea that, on one hand, his value as the highest paid player on the team doesn't matter when it comes to low level of snaps, which, again, I can't believe. But in the case of the top offensive player, McCoy, it does matter. Yeah. I mean, it does matter. They want to get the most out of their best player.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe Vic, the biggest positive to come out of week one was that scare that they got in midway through the fourth quarter when, you know, he comes off the field and he's holding his wrist, and then he goes to that kind of goofy sideline trainer's tent that they have this year in the NFL. Yeah. But he was able to emerge from that, get back into the game, and he mentioned on Wednesday he had his right wrist sort of lightly taped, that he was feeling okay and that it was just a football play. But boy, oh boy, I mean, how many times this season are Bills fans going to be holding their breath? I mean, I think after every tackle, they're going to take an extra second to watch and make sure that LeSean McCoy gets up and looks like he's okay. He's just that important to this offense.
Absolutely. The tent of, let's see, they called it, I'm probably dating myself, and probably you're too young to know this, but Get Smart, Maxwell Smart, had the cone of silence that would go over when he didn't want anybody to hear his conversations, and it never worked well. The thing always, like, knocked somebody's head or whatever. I'm going to call that the tent of silence, the blue tent of silence.
That's right.
Because it locks out everybody, so we don't know what kind of treatment the guy's getting. All right, let's get into the what-if game. What if the Bills win? What if they are 2-0? It's one thing to beat the horrific Jets, or at least we think they're horrific. Maybe they're going to turn it around in these final 15 games. I doubt it, but maybe they will, and maybe everyone was wrong about them tanking. The Panthers aren't supposed to be tanking. The Panthers are supposed to be really good and determined to bounce back from the disappointment of 2016 after making the Super Bowl in 2015. They're playing at home. They're facing their former defensive coordinator, their former assistant GM. A lot of pride on the line and a lot on the line just period for Ron Rivera and that whole organization. And if the Bills win that game, the conversation's changing here. I mean, people have that sense of positive bounce in their step that the Bills didn't let them down. They did. I mean, there's that faction that says, yeah, they beat the Jets. Okay, talk to me when they beat somebody good. Well, they're playing somebody good, and they could easily end up beating somebody good. I'm not saying I expect that, but there is enough, especially early in the season, where goofy things happen, where you saw this Panther team, especially their quarterback, look rusty through the first half of that game at San Francisco. And that was San Francisco. And, yeah, they went all the way to the West Coast. All right, they that game should have been easier. The Bills win should have been bigger and easier, too. But this is the Panthers. They win this game, Jay. The conversation changes in a hurry.
No doubt about it. I mean, this would be a game that I think most would qualify as a quality win right now, certainly, and maybe at the end of the year that's different. I mean, when you look at what Carolina did last year, if you would have beaten the Panthers in week two, you would have felt like, holy cow, we just knocked off the defending NFC champions. We might be heading to the postseason. Now, it turns out that Carolina had sort of a disastrous year last year, so you never really can truly say 2 weeks into the season how much a win is going to matter, but At the bare minimum, this is a game that I think when many people did their sort of season projection game by game going through the list, they probably had down as a loss. If they're able to win it, it goes a long way to me toward sort of legitimizing this team as maybe one that we sort of undersold a little bit. And I'm not going to say that you darn sure shouldn't start planning the parade down Delaware. And I'm not even going to get ready to, maybe say that this is a playoff team or anything of that nature. But it certainly would be a game that I think would capture the imagination and the attention of Bills fans, certainly. I mean, a 2-0 start is a 2-0 start, and Bills fans don't need a lot to get excited about, and that certainly would do it for them. But I think it would also sort of, you know, change the perception a little bit out there nationally of this team. You know, you look at I saw ESPN in their power rankings this year drop the Bills down a spot after winning. I mean, how does that happen? You know what I mean? I think you could see a team that would certainly rise a good deal if it were able to go on the road and win in Carolina in week two. And again, I want to caution that I don't think that necessarily makes them a playoff contender or anything like that. I mean, the expectations for this team, I think, are largely unchanged after week one because it was the Jets, and that's legitimate. But the Jets, you know, the Panthers aren't the Jets. So we would, I think this win would obviously bring about a much greater level of respect, of recognition, of sort of impressiveness.
And let's also point this out. When we say expectations haven't changed, those are outside expectations, right? Those are your expectations, my expectations. I'm sure a lot of colleagues that we have in the media, locally, perhaps even nationally, you point out ESPN dropping them a spot. So there is one big national no vote for confidence in the Bills. But I've made reference to pride as it applies to the Panthers, as it applies to Cam Newton, their quarterback. Pride cuts both ways. Pride in being on a team that people look at with low expectation, and that would qualify the Jets for that dubious honor that no one expects them to do anything. Keep in mind those players. If there is a tanking process going on, they have nothing to do with that. Players, I mean, their attitude is, screw this tanking stuff. I've got a job. I want to keep my job. I want to be around for a long time on this team and in the league. And I don't want to look bad. I don't want to go out on Sunday and be ridiculed. There are Bills players who've heard a lot about, well, they're building for the future. Look at all the draft picks they're stocking. Look at all the moves they've made or didn't make to keep this team strong, trading Sammy Watkins, the whole list, trading Ronald Darby. It's the second. The season began as they were the second oldest roster. Did I see that stat?
Yeah, actually, and that'll be a good plug there. Nice cheap plug for tomorrow's notebook. Yeah, Bills are the second oldest team in the NFL as of opening weekend. Now, maybe that has changed slightly.
But give or take, they're one of the oldest. Okay,
oldest in the AFC, second oldest in the NFL behind Arizona.
To make a point, what I want to say is that tells you. The types of players, the mindset of those guys is, hey, we're here, a lot of my one-year deals, we're here to prove the rest of you knuckleheads that we are good this year, and if those draft picks help us in the future, fine, but we don't care about the 2018 draft picks. We're here to show you what we're all about. And I think there is a big chip on their shoulder. I think Sean McDermott plays that to the hilt in every meeting and every opportunity he gets to be around these guys. Don't you think? I mean, that there's an undercurrent of something that I think it's easy to overlook and probably shouldn't be overlooked.
I think it starts with their quarterback. I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor can say all he wants about how he doesn't read or listen or watch about, you know, what's being said about him. I think he knows everything that's being said about him. And I think he plays with a chip on his shoulder and he's got something to prove. He darn sure does have something to prove. I mean, he's playing to, you know, to be here next year. So it starts with him and then it filters down through the rest of that roster. I mean, go ask Eric Wood if he's tanking, if he thinks he wants to tank. I mean, it's never been about the players tanking. It never was when the Sabres went through what they went through, and it's not with the Bills. I mean, you're dead on there. These players can't afford to tank. I mean, that would be asinine on their part because they wouldn't be in the league anymore. So that us against the world mentality is not a new motivational ploy that coaches have used,
right?
But I think it's absolutely at play here with this team. I mean, and I, you know, I'll be the first to admit it. I do not have high expectations for this team. I think I picked them to go 6-10.
Yeah, me
who
too.
Knows how many that they, you know, how many of those players in that locker room saw that? I know some of them did, and I don't know. It's not that they're holding it against me personally, but I'm sure that there is a big part of that locker room that wants to go out and prove that, hey, you underestimated us. And
they're going to say, how do you like that, Jay?
Right about that, right? Isn't that what it was? Right about that, Tyrod, now famously proclaimed. So, all right, what do you think? Got a couple time for some Twitter questions?
Yeah, people submitting your Twitter questions for Jay Skirsky, at Jay Skirsky, at Vic Carucci. Let's hit them.
All right. John Christ says, football is an emotional game. If Bills players bought into new regime, should we see it on the field Sunday, expecting a W for Buffalo? Should we see? Okay.
Well, that's along the lines of what we were just talking about a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think where I think he's going with this is, you know, are they going to be playing for Sean McDermott? And, you know, I think that's a topic that you might want to address, right? And we talked a little bit about that, right?
I think it's a very interesting topic because we've got a little bit of a potential contradiction where a head coach and maybe it's unintentional or it's circumstantial is the word. You have a head coach who we know this is his homecoming. This is a big deal for him. Players who recognize that and potentially will play for that. I don't know where it ranks on their lists of priorities. I'm gonna go back to the pride thing of being dissed and being told that they're not expected to do much of anything as being a much higher priority on the emotion list. But when you think about McDermott, who preaches 111, everybody's got to be together on something, if he's putting his own interests ahead of that in any way, if that comes off, even if he doesn't say the words, and I can't envision him walking up in front of the team, guys, win this one for me. He's never going to say that, ever. But if it's somehow conveyed that the general, the commanding person of any organization conveys that it's about him or her, if they're running whatever business or whatever it is, I think that can create a mixed message.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Walt Patulski, who Rex Ryan definitely has to thank for being brought back into the public consciousness. And now, I mean, how many times? I've heard Walt Patulski more since Rex said that than I ever had
Tim
in my life.
Tim Graham made a cottage industry out of it. allowed Walt to have a little cottage industry.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Yes.
Good for Walt.
Good for old Walt, yeah. All right. He's Walt Patulski, who I don't think is actually Walt Patulski on Twitter.
I think it's a Twitter name.
Yeah, says, if Tyrod isn't retained for whatever reason, do you believe the 2018 Bills starting quarterback is in college, on the roster, or in the NFL? It's a good question.
Go ahead.
I am going to, looking at those three choices, it's a tough one. I think I'm 50-50 on it. I think that Peterman possibly could start next year, depending. Let me back up a little bit and say this. The Bills are going to draft a quarterback. I am virtually certain of that very early in the 2018 draft. Every move that Brandon Bean has made since he became general manager, to me, is setting himself up and the team up to find that franchise quarterback, the quarterback of the future. They've given themselves the draft ammunition to do just that. I believe that is the... What would that be, a short or a long-term plan? I guess it's a little bit of both. But, you know, for the next draft, identifying a quarterback early in the draft, to me, is the plan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we can say for sure that player is going to start. I mean, if he comes in and they deem that he's too raw, I think Peterman could start for a year to see what they have. So I'm going to go toss-up between rookie or Nathan Peterman. I don't think it'll be Tyrod Taylor. I've been saying that for a long time. There's still 15 games that maybe he changes that belief of mine. But right now, nothing that Tyrod Taylor did in week one greatly changed my opinion about him either way. So I do think that the team is positioning itself to move on from him. And will it be a rookie or will it be Peterman? I can't say that with a certainty right now. But that's where I'm at.
I'm going to say it's Peterman. I'll pick Peterman, or the option was on the roster,
yep.
And it's him, I believe. No offense, Joe Webb, but I think the future is Peterman, of course. And I do agree with you 100% that they draft a quarterback and draft one relatively high, and then do their darndest not to push that player onto the field as a rookie because they believe Peterman can be an answer, maybe an intermediate answer, maybe not just a short-term answer, but an intermediate answer. Granted, when you're investing a high pick in a QB, you expect that player to be the guy, and perhaps that'll still be the thought process, but I wouldn't hate it if they went down a very similar road to the Redskins and backstopped themselves, even though Redskins did it in the same draft,
yeah,
with RG3, Robert Griffin III, and Kirk Cousins. The Bills would be in consecutive drafts sort of backstopping themselves, and I think there's some validity to that being an actual thought process of theirs, a bigger strategy that we'll take this guy now, we like him, fifth rounder, maybe we had him graded higher, I think they did, but other people did. But in 18, where we know there's better quarterbacks, we're going to position ourselves to get a guy there, and I think they do it. Tyrod Taylor, for his part, I think has shown what his ceiling is for this. He showed it to the previous administration. I think the group in charge here wanted him, of course, to be their guy for a year and got him at the right price, the $10 million pay cut, because they knew that if they didn't do that, it could really be a disaster, putting it in the hands of a rookie, any rookie this year.
Or Josh McCown, or somebody like that.
Or some guy off the street. The options weren't better than figuring out a way to keep Tyrod here. And here's the other key thing to note as we look forward, and I think I have this right. March 3rd of 2018, there's a $6 million payment, I believe, if you look into Tyrod's contract, sitting out there that he would have to be owed. So
that's decision day then.
That's a decision day, very similar to what we've been through with this guy seemingly every year.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I mean, you know, there's 15 games left, but I didn't think anything that happened in that Jets game, you know, greatly changed any opinions that I have about Tyrod Taylor. I don't know about for you.
It didn't. No. And in fact, and I wrote about this, and again, you could see this on BN Blitz. My analysis after the game, or a couple of days later, was the knockdown passes was something to note because it's a trend.
Right.
It's been a trend, and it was a five series stretch. Those final two that he had played of the preseason, the only two he played against Baltimore, and he had two passes knocked down in each of the first two, or deflected, one flat out knocked down by Terrell Suggs, and then in this Jets game where you saw the guys getting hands on the ball, and rushers know how to deal with him. And how do you deal with him? You don't overcommit because he's going to run under you,
right,
and get away. So you sort of slow play it a little bit, get your arms up, because here's the other thing Tyrod doesn't do to help himself, and that is get the ball out quickly. I don't think his timing is part of this issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I wouldn't blame the O-line necessarily, or can they do a better job of keeping. Hey, if a guy's 6'7" and he gets his arm up, he's going to get his arm up. An O-lineman, I don't know how much he prevents that other than possibly holding the guy, knocking him down, tackling him. You got to do things within the framework of the rules, or at least mostly so. So I think that's part of it. But I like this. I like that he went to Dennison, as he explained, Tyrod did, after the game, and started saying, hey, let's get some moving pocket plays in here, after, I think, seeing some of those struggles from the pocket. And look at what happened. I mean, it helped him pick his game up, I thought.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't spectacular, he was solid. He was good.
Yeah, it did. It did improve as the game went on. Okay, last one is from Lofus89. He says, and I referenced this earlier, could signing Poyer be Doug Whaley's real parting gift to the franchise? I like that. If there was one player, Vic, that I think I would pick that I was most impressed with, or maybe pleasantly surprised is a better way of putting it. I mean, we were all impressed with LeSean McCoy, but we kind of have become accustomed to his greatness. I thought that Jordan Poyer played out just a dynamite game against the Jets, and you know, he was a guy that has not played he does not have a ton of starts in this league. coming off an absolutely brutal injury last year for the Browns that involved a lacerated kidney, internal bleeding, just some really scary stuff. You know, he's been with Micah Hyde. They've been starters really from day one, from the moment they signed back in March. That has been the starting safety duo. And Poyer, I mean, you want big plays out of your safety. I mean, that, you know, Corey Graham started a lot of games for this Bills team over the last few years. I don't know how many big plays that he really made though. There were a few, but Poyer, you know, with a sack that you broke down earlier, with an interception, with a really nice open field tackle, and those are the types of things that you got to see from your safety, and I thought he really came through. So how much credit do you want to give Doug Whaley for that signing versus Sean McDermott? I mean, we'll have that debate for years and years and years going forward, but yeah, I mean, 1 week in, Poyer looks like a good player, and you know, the hope for the Bills has to be that he can keep it going and stay healthy.
Well, Whaley was the GM of record. There's no denying that, but I do think from just an evaluative standpoint, Sean McDermott absolutely had eyeballs, especially on defensive players, studied tape extensively from everything I'm told, and I also know that particular area, secondary, is one. I mean, he coached linebackers and secondary in the course of his position coaching days. Those are the areas where he pays the greatest attention, where he, and especially safety, he knows how vital it is to have that position right. I think there was no accident that free agent pairing went that way. They weren't marquee names, but they were two players that they put in the category of ready to ascend, and especially with Micah Hyde in Green Bay, where he had been kind of the Swiss Army knife, played all these different positions. Now he's got an identity as a safety on the Bills. Jordan Poyer, and I was there in Cleveland working for the Browns when he was there. I can tell you there was a lot of high regard for his talent and his ability. And up to the time that he got hurt, the feeling was, you know, watch what this guy can do. I know how excited they were when they selected him. And I had done some research and background, and I said, wow, this is a special athlete with a special attitude. He is a hard hitter. It didn't shock me that he got that injury because he throws, you know, body and soul into hits. Obviously, you've got to, you know, use good judgment, be careful. I know that was, there were some people around the league who wondered how, if that would affect him psychologically and how he played. But you watch him, and I watching him in that first game, I think he's very much tuned in and dialed up to be the kind of player, you know, they wanted to be. Watch this guy. This guy has all-pro, Pro Bowl potential.
Yeah, he seems to have, at least, he, you know, everything that we've gathered, and he's a really even-keel guy when you talk to him, sort of kind of quiet, but he seems to have put that injury behind him. I don't know if that's just, you know, the message that he wants to convey publicly, but he, you know, I asked him about it Sunday after the game. You know, does it mean more to do this based on, you know, the way that your season ended last year? And he was very quick to say that, you know, he had put that injury behind him. It wasn't even a thought in his mind anymore. And, you know, if that truly is the case, that's good for him. And so far, you know, and obviously it's very early, but it's been a good move for the Bills.
And coming from the Browns, where he was just part of so much losing, you know, this guy, his jaw is set to be part of something successful. So he too comes in here with this idea that all the rest of us who might be talking about low expectation, you know, I think he tunes that out or rolls his eye or whatever rolls his eyes. It might be just a feeling of, okay, yeah, you guys can have all the opinions you want. Okay, that'll do it. That was great stuff. Really good questions. Great food for thought. And we will see what happens in Carolina. We'll, of course, be there along with Jerry Sullivan, providing full coverage. Our entire BN Blitz staff will be churning it out for you, so make sure you're visiting there. And for Jay Skirsky, I am Vic Carucci, and saying we will talk to you again next week on the BN Blitz podcast.